You're listening to WYXR 91.7 FM, Memphis, powered by the Crosstown Radio Partnership between the Daily Memphian, Crosstown Concourse, and the University of Memphis. We are raised by sound.
Good morning, Memphis. Welcome to Faithfully Memphis. This is Canon Sharon Alexander with the Diocese of West Tennessee. Every morning at 8 a.m., we have the opportunity to speak with interesting people and to learn more about the role that faith has played in their lives. We broadcast from WYXR 91.7 in Memphis, Tennessee. My name is Sharon Alexander. I'm the canon to the ordinary for the Diocese of Tennessee, which means that I am the one that works with the bishop. But basically, she comes up with the ideas, and I'm the one that puts them in play, sort of the chief operating officer. And I am pleased that I get to interview some brand new deacons today. But first, want to wish everyone a happy Memorial Day week. I hope that all of our listeners had a wonderful Memorial Day weekend. And part of what we do in the Episcopal Church is that we say special prayers for those that gave their lives serving our country. And we do many things that honor our fallen heroes. There are some churches that go out and decorate graves. There are others that send flowers to veterans administrations and veterans hospitals. Some churches take up donations to help the veterans and the families, especially the families of those who've died. And while it's a day of vacation and feasting on things like hot dogs and barbecue, especially here in Memphis, ice cream, it's also a day that the flag flies at half staff. And while I now work for the bishop, I used to be a parish priest, and I learned a lot about the different ways that people celebrate Memorial Day and commemorate our fallen. When I was back in Louisiana, it wasn't so much barbecue, it was po'boys and gumbo. And I also learned that they had some interesting ideas on what was supposed to be celebrated and what wasn't at my very first parish down there. When I had only been there for a couple of months, Memorial Day came up, and we did what I always did before, which was take the names of all of the friends and the relatives who had died serving our country and put those on our prayer list. And we had someone who asked, well, is it okay to pray for her son who was serving overseas? And we had several requests like that. And of course I said, yeah, we will do that, and we'll just put it in a separate part of the prayers. And after we had our service, we had an elderly gentleman from the Coast Guard, and he came up, and his first words were to me, I can't believe you killed me. And I said, can you tell me what that was all about? And he said, I'm a veteran, and today we only pray for those who are dead. And I said, well, I understand your line of thinking, I think, and tried to explain that if somebody asks for prayers, we give prayers. And I said, you know, I didn't list you with the names of the dead. In fact, I didn't even list you by name. And finally, he just gave up. And then one of the elderly ladies came up and said, I think we should just have a funeral for him and tell him that the dead don't complain. And then right after that, I had these three ladies come up to me. And these are three ladies that were also up in years, and none of them had indoor voices. And they came up and they said, I cannot believe you have desecrated our church by celebrating a Yankee holiday. And I'm thinking, okay, I'm from Texas, and that's not exactly Yankee territory, and we celebrate Memorial Day all the time. But these ladies claimed that, and it was funny because they all claimed that they were liberal Democrats, but this was a Yankee holiday, and they just were appalled. And I sent them to Wikipedia, and that didn't change their mind. But I learned right then and there that everybody has their ideas, and sometimes it just looks a little strange in the churches, and we may find out from our new deacons some strange things that they've seen as well. But just like we have a variety of ways of observing Memorial Day, the history of Memorial Day does have a lot of different threads. And it did start in both the North and the South, but the North and the South did it different ways after the Civil War. And it wasn't really until World War I that we started doing things together. And it didn't become an official holiday until 1967, when we were dealing with Vietnam and all of the persons who died there, including a number from my hometown. I come from one of those little tiny towns in South Texas where half the streets are named after young men who fell during World War I, World War II, Vietnam. And so it is customary in our church and in many churches to honor the memory of those who have made the ultimate sacrifice. And that is part of what we do. It's not just a celebration, but it really is a memorial. And we ask God to bless them and to thank them for their service to us. So we did have Memorial Day this weekend, but we also had two brand new deacons made in our diocese. We had their ordination, so that made it an extra special weekend for a number of us. And one of the jobs of a deacon is to look out and see where we need to find where injustice is, where people are hurting, and where we need to take God's love and care. And this is considered a bit of a sacrifice that we do. They could be doing any number of other things with their time, but they are sacrificing their time for the betterment of people who need help. And so we're going to talk to them, but before we do that, I want to listen to America the Beautiful, which is sung by the U.S. Navy Band. It's one of the hymns that is in our hymnal, and it is absolutely appropriate for this Memorial Day week.
Skies forever waiting.
Welcome back, listeners. I would like to introduce Debbie McCandless and Jessica Abel, who have both been ordained deacons this past weekend. And one of the first things that we're doing is interviewing them. I know that may be a little nerve-wracking, but we love having you here. If each of you would just introduce yourself, tell us where you're from, where you work, and one of your favorite things about Memphis. Why don't we go alphabetically, Jessica?
Man, you introduced Debbie first. I thought I was going to get a pass on that. My name is Jessica Abel, and I am originally from Augusta, Georgia, but we moved to Memphis when I was 16, so I claim it now as home. I am the head chaplain at St. George's Independent School, and one of my favorite things about Memphis, is that the other thing I'm supposed to answer?
Mm-hmm.
The food, I guess? I'm Debbie's shaking her head. Y'all can't see. I think I just took her answer. But there's so much great food in Memphis, and we are big, big fans of Memphis Pizza Cafe and Mantra out in Germantown and Casablanca. And there's a microphone being moved closer, so sorry if y'all couldn't hear me. And I feel like there was one other place that I really... Oh, Huey's, of course. We love Huey's. Debbie's also shaking her head. Sorry. I'm going to pass to you now, though, Debbie. I think it's your turn.
Good morning. I'm Debbie McCandless, and I grew up in Dyersburg, Tennessee, a small town about 80 miles or so from here. But I've been in Memphis for about 40 plus years, so I consider Memphis my home. I work at St. Jude Children's Research Hospital in the Clinical Trials Finance Office. And Jessica did steal my answers. One of the things I love about Memphis is the food. She also stole one of my favorite places is Huey's, because that's where my family and I went to eat after ordination on Saturday. But I do, I love the barbecue. And we have such a wide variety. We have such nice upscale, plus we have good food trucks. I live down on the island, so we have a couple of food trucks that come every week, plus Paulette's, and also one of my favorite places is Libro at Novel Bookstore. Mm-hmm. I love to go there and get books and eat.
So if there are any of you folks listening out there who haven't had breakfast, I bet you're hungry now. Well, one of the reasons I asked Debbie and Jessica what their day job is that deacons in the Episcopal Church are folks who do the work for their church usually for free, so they got to have a day job to pay the bills. And for those of you who aren't familiar with what the vocation of a deacon is, it comes from a passage in the Bible, 1 Timothy chapter 3. It says, "Deacons must likewise be serious, not double-tongued, not indulging in much wine." First time I read that, I was thinking, I'm really glad that said wine instead of beer. But also not greedy for money, must hold fast to the mystery of the faith with a clear conscience. And let them first be tested, and then if they prove themselves blameless, let them serve as deacons. And I can assure you that these two have been tested. I'm going to talk to them a bit about the education that they had to get and some of the hoops that they had to jump through. But some of you may be familiar with deacons in other churches. What they are in the Episcopal Church comes from our Book of Common Prayer, which says that it is a special ministry of servanthood directly under the bishop, and that they are called to serve all people, especially the poor, the weak, the sick, and the lonely. They are to interpret to the church the needs and the concerns and the hopes of the world, and at all times their life and teaching is to show Christ's people that in serving the helpless, they are serving Christ himself. Debbie and Jessica, you guys did have to jump through some hoops and to do some things to become deacons. Would one of you like to tell a little bit about what that looked like? Or y'all can kind of help each other out on that, because your paths were a little different. Why don't we start with you, Debbie?
Okay, thanks. yes, I started the process in 2013. So that was a few years ago, and I did have some starts and stops, but the good thing is I had people who were supportive and kept me going. And part of the education, we had to meet. You know, you have to go through the discernment process, meet with your priest, your rector. I met with mine for about a year, and we studied, and then he decided, he agreed that, yes, I was ready to move forward. But then the diocese was going through some changes and, you know, reevaluating things. And so then that was a hold, and then restarted. But you meet with committees, you meet with individuals, you do study. And then we had our official training at Sewanee, and I'll let Jess say a little bit about that.
Sure. So Debbie and I actually met for the first time in the discernment process, and that was the first meeting was a day long with family and all sorts of things. And so we met then, and then we really got to know each other because I asked her for a ride to Sewanee. So we spent 4.5 hours, I guess, bonding on the way to Sewanee, and have been friends since then. So that was a really neat experience.
Exactly.
But the Sewanee process is actually 2 years, and it's in residence, and it was virtual learning also before virtual learning was a thing. So we started on Blackboard, and then there was this new technology called Zoom that we used early on, pre-pandemic, which was fun because then we were kind of experts when we rolled into it. But it's 8 courses, and so we got to do a little bit of intense study with Old Testament and New Testament and liturgy and just ethics and moral philosophy. So it was really great training, and being there with the clergy that were learning also in the School of Theology was a really neat experience.
Yeah, it was. And there were also, the program is for, it's called Eternity Clergy Training at Sewanee, the ACTS program. Did you say that already?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, sorry. And so there were other classmates that were part of the priestly track, that they would be bivocational priests. Jess and I were the two starting as the vocational deacons, and then as the years progressed, we did pick up another one or two vocational deacons. So it was interesting, as she said, to be there not only with Sewanee professors and be on the mountain. It is a holy place. But to meet these other clergies in training from different areas, I should say mostly from the South, that were in our class. So it was really interesting to meet other people and to listen to their stories and where they were headed.
Well, why don't you tell the folks a little bit about your story and how you wound up at Sewanee and in this program?
So I feel like Debbie sort of took a little bit of that earlier, so I'll speak to that. I would say that my process started way back in like 2007 when I started being a chaplain at St. George's, and it just sort of evolved that has been my ministry and my work. And after doing that for many, many, many years and just feeling really called to work with children in that capacity, Bishop Johnson actually asked if I wanted to go to coffee, and he was like, "So have you thought about this?" And I was like, "No, I have not." And so the more I learned about it and prayed about it and talked about it, the more I thought, this is something that I would like to explore. And again, started the discernment process where I met Debbie. But Chip Davis said something to me at the beginning of that process where he said, "I was discerning until the moment the bishop laid hands on me." And that's something that's really stuck with me, because I thought, that's such a really neat way to look at this and to just continue through the process and learn everything I can. And it has just, I guess, furthered my my call in that respect. And that was, I'm sure I'm jumping ahead of Canon Sharon here, but that was something that was really, really moving, because that thought has stuck with me since he said it. And so at the ordination, when she really did lay hands on me, it was a really amazing experience. Debbie's shaking her head, so I don't know. What was that like for you?
It was. And, you know, I said my process officially started in 2013, but like you, there was yearnings and leadings. And I don't have a big call story. I don't have an aha moment. But there has been a constant and steady pull that I have felt toward being more involved and working in a different way for God and God's church. And also, as you said, Ken and Sharon, for those that are marginalized, I feel that I'm called to be a servant leader which is what, you know, a deacon does. And but when the bishop laid hands, I like what you said about Canon Davis, that our discernment process continues up into that moment. And when she did lay hands, and then when my son vested me, my son Peter Dale, give him a shout out, he vested me, it all came home. It felt real and scary and exciting, and I cried.
As did I.
That happens to a lot of folks. For the folks who are listening, when Debbie's talking about vesting, that means that was the time a deacon stole was put on her for the first time. And that's one of the marks of being clergy when we're in the liturgy is to wear that stole. With deacons, it's worn across their left side, which means it's over their hearts to show, you hear the phrase, the heart of a deacon a lot, and that's where some of that comes from. And yes, it was a really moving ceremony. It was wonderful to watch you all really just be transformed a little bit. You're still the persons you were before, but you're different now, right? So tell me about when you first talked to your family and friends about thinking about being a deacon. What did they say?
My family was very supportive. I grew up Methodist, and before I was confirmed Episcopalian, I talked to my mom. I said, you know, I mean, yeah, I was an adult, but I just sort of wanted her blessing, and she was quite happy and pleased. And my family was very supportive. And one thing, but once it got real, and I was telling my mother that I was going to Suwannee, it was a 2-year program, and we had to go for 2 weeks, and then we'd have we would be online and doing things in between time. Of course, you'd have to know my mother. She looked at me, very straightforward woman, and she said, well, that's a lot of work just to set the table. And I had to explain a little bit more, though. It's not just setting the table, but you know what? She kind of had a point there from a Methodist perspective. My mother always kept me down to earth, and she has always been, God rest her soul, my biggest supporter.
Mm-hmm. So, Debbie, did you get to set the table on Sunday?
I did.
You get everything in the right place?
I did, and I was nervous, you know, but I am at St. John's, my parish now that I'll be serving in, and so the Reverend Miranda Cully was there beside me to make sure I didn't do anything really too offset or mm-hmm. off, or too bad and didn't drop anything. Mm-hmm. So that was the main thing. No one got hurt, and everything got placed where it was supposed to be.
Good deal. That's a good start.
Well, yes, it is.
Jessica, what did your family and friends think when you told them, I'm thinking about maybe being a deacon?
Everyone was really supportive. I will say we had at the time 2 children, and the youngest was not quite 2. Now we have 3 because we just like to make sure our house is chaotic all the time. But so it was quite a commitment, and everything just sort of opened up for me to be able to do it. Being away for that long and having my mom come and help my husband so that I could be gone with 2 small children for extended periods of time, because we had a few sessions where we were gone for 2 weeks, which was a little tricky. And it just, I felt completely supported by my school community, by my friends, by my family. And, you know, thinking about also the work of a deacon for me, and one of the ways that we often talked about it in Suwannee was just that you were kind of a go-between the world and the church. And for me, I can't think of a better place to be a go-between than working at a school where you have kids that are coming from all different areas and different faith communities and different backgrounds. And so that's been a wonderful experience for me to be there with them.
Have the kids had a chance to see you wearing the collar?
They have not, because they are on summer break and they are excited about that. But they will next year.
I got to help Jessica with a chapel service and introduce the collar to them. And Jessica will be wearing a little different uniform than what she did before. How do you feel about that?
Well, it'll be on occasion. I think I probably will wear it for like the first day of school and maybe Ash Wednesday service and things like that. But it'll be different, and it'll require, I spend most of my time on one of the lower school campuses, so it'll require some explanation. And then, just like small children, they'll forget about it and move on with their day.
Yeah, we're going to need to do a follow-up with both of you, but especially with you, Jessica, to find out the crazy questions that the kids are going to ask. Back when I was had a school back in Louisiana, the kids were always asking things. Now, are you married to Jesus? Is God part of your family? And oh, yeah, absolutely, God is part of my family. The kids ask the greatest questions.
Oh, they do. I have some junior kindergartners a couple years ago that they were like, God is really everywhere? Like in this strawberry everywhere? Really cute.
Makes them hesitate on eating that strawberry, huh?
Or want to eat it, because then they'll feel like they're super blessed.
There you go. Well, I want to ask both of you. You both went to a program in Suwannee where you were kind of pioneers on this, among the first of the folks doing this, and to be there with folks. You mentioned, Debbie, that some of them were going to be bivocational priests, which, for our listeners who don't know what that is, that's somebody who is going to keep their regular day job. But they are also going to be working with the church, and we are getting more of those in the Episcopal Church, and are pleased that some of our seminaries are working with that. And then there's also another kind of deacon. You all have mentioned vocational deacons, but there are also transitional deacons, and our diocese will be ordaining a couple of them in just a few weeks now. And a transitional deacon is one who is going to be a deacon for about 6 months in the Episcopal Church, and then they become a priest. But you all are not on a priesthood track, are you?
No. We are perpetual deacons. Yes, I mean, this is what I felt called to do. It is to be, as Jess said, sort of a go-between between the church and the world, and bring the needs of to help interpret the needs of the world to the church, and take the church out. I mean, as baptized Christians, that is all of our call and responsibility. But I think as a deacon, we can be more, empower, lead by example, and get people to follow us, and for us to follow them, and see what the actual needs of our respective communities are.
Yeah. Yeah, Jessica mentioned that she was really called to work with children in that capacity. Do you have anything that is a focus for you, an interest for you?
Well, one thing that I do have an interest in, and COVID really sort of put a damper on this, is prison ministry, particularly women. Not that men don't need ministry also, and I'm open to whatever, but I really felt called and to work with women, incarcerated women. But then with the pandemic, and so how that may be reimagined and what that looks like is still yet to be seen, and I'm open. And in my new parish that I have been assigned to, you know, they have an outreach committee already, and I need to see what their needs and what they're doing and where they want to go. But our diocese is large. You know, we can work with many things, and if prison ministry comes up, I think that could be something that could be diocesan-wide.
Wonderful. And prison ministry isn't necessarily, if anybody is interested in learning more about prison ministry, it's not just going to visit people in prison, is it?
No, and it's also helping them once they are being released or prior to release, and supporting, what are their needs while they're in it? Families. You know, they're... I don't have the statistics, but in a last year or so, or a couple of years ago when I was writing a paper, the number of women being incarcerated in Shelby County has increased. And so it impacts the whole family. Yeah. And what can we as a church do?
Jessica, I was talking to you a little bit earlier about Suwannee, and that not all of your experiences there were deeply religious, theological learning things, but some fun things happen in these programs too, and sometimes you see something that you haven't seen before or just get enlightened in a different way. Tell me some of the more interesting things that have happened there.
Well, Ken and Sharon was asking me, like, just like, you know, what the experience was like, and you mentioned Miranda earlier, and of course I'm thinking of Miranda and you setting the table. We went to Swanee with Miranda, the Reverend Miranda Cully, also thinking, of course, she's the perfect person to be right next to you because she was with us the whole time. But a funny story for me is I am a person that likes to like triple check things to make sure that I'm going to do it correctly. And so we went in the first time to, do you know which story I'm going to tell? We went into the Chapel of the Apostles for communion. We went for noonday Eucharist. And I have always been a person, because of germs, that likes to intaint. And they have, they don't have wafers there. They have like big pieces of, and I say big pieces of bread that they pull off. And so they handed me, like, I want to say it could fit in, like, I don't know, like a golf ball size piece of bread. And I went to intaint and she covered the wine, and I was like, oh my gosh, what am I gonna do? So I had to really quickly shove the entire piece of bread in my mouth. I'm holding up the line, and anyway, it clearly I took communion and felt like I did it the wrong way. But there is no wrong way to take communion, and it's been a great story to share with my students, like if they've been nervous about something, I'm like, let me tell you what I did in front of a bunch of almost priests.
Exactly. And that's what kids need to hear, isn't it? And in fact, that's what everybody needs to hear, isn't it? That there really aren't right and wrong ways. People go into churches, and one of the things they get nervous about is, oh, am I going to mess something up? And y'all are some of the folks that can help set people at ease, that you have had communion in a very different way than you ever thought, and people can learn from that. Debbie, did you have any fun experience like that?
I didn't have a particular experience like that. I had a lot of fun. It was fun to meet after class, and I usually stayed on the weekends, and so to meet some of the other seminary students and to gather at Shenanigans. Or
what's Shenanigans?
It's a restaurant.
A restaurant.
It's a local pub.
Mm-hmm. But there was no indulging in too much wine, as Timothy would never happen, right?
No, nor beer.
Nor beer.
But so goats. I guess being on the mountain and goats. So you know, mountain goats are. There's a really fun place. It is a restaurant, sort of little grocery or gathering place, the Mountain Goat, mm-hmm. which is a lot of fun. And
the Swanee Inn has the best Brussels sprouts, like, anywhere, in case you're a fan of Brussels sprouts.
Are your kids fans of Brussels sprouts?
Everyone will eat Brussels sprouts except for my oldest. He won't touch them.
Yeah, and there was a really, there's a really cute shop there called the Lemon Fair. Mm-hmm. And so it was just fun to go in. So, you know, Swanee is a really small, I don't know if quaint is the right word, but it's a college town. But it also is fun and a little bit eclectic, maybe. So it was just good to be there. And there are trails mm-hmm. to hike, although I can't say I hiked that many. And just the surroundings are beautiful. Mm-hmm. And the cross on the I don't know what's the that particular air hill or but anyway the cross is sort of an iconic symbol mm-hmm. At Sewanee. That I don't know the appropriate name of the place that it's at.
I can't think of it either right now.
It sounds like that in addition to the courses you were taking, that getting to talk with the people and learning their life stories was part of your formation as well.
Yes, and one of the neat things about being in the ACTS program is that most of our professors, well, not most, but about half, did not actually live at Swanee. They would come in for the couple of weeks that they needed to be there. And so they held office hours, like at restaurants with us, so we could continue discussions outside of classes. So that was kind of cool.
Yeah, that was fun.
And the other students, a lot of them, it sounds like, sort of like y'all had day jobs and They were there just for short periods of time to get their school education, but then the rest, the bulk of their formation was back in their diocese.
Yeah, the people in our colleagues and that were in our class group, definitely. But it was also really interesting and fun to see the actual, you know, not just seminary students, but the college students. You know, we'd be around campus, you know, going to lunch, just going to the library, and seeing all these young people. But it was interesting that the seminary students, you know, there was a mix of, you know, young and then mature, like me.
Yes, there's nothing quite like walking into the school cafeteria feeling like you are 20-something years older than, you know, than everyone else in there. And they look at you like, why are you here? What are you teaching? You're like, yeah, I'm in school.
Well, Jessica, did you, Debbie was at a church on Sunday. Were you serving at Grace St. Luke's on Sunday? Or
I was not. I actually went to hear a dear friend preach at Holy Communion. Mm-hmm. The Reverend John Burris was in town from Birmingham, and so I went to listen to him preach, and I will start serving at GSL on June 13th.
So what are you doing to prepare for that?
Well, I'm making sure that I have all of the things that I need, which is something that one wouldn't have thought of. I actually had zero stoles before last Wednesday. Mm-hmm. Now I have seven, which is amazing. But also just praying and talking to people and making sure I'm ready. And I'll be there early because that'll make me feel better about everything. And I'll have to get a refresher on how to set the table and see where we are as far as setting the table goes now, as opposed to when I was there last in November.
Yeah, that's true. I got there early, and Miranda, you know, walked me through it. And but just a little funny story. When I was at Grace St. Luke's, I don't know, it was a few weeks ago when I preached and also was helping set the table. And of course, you know, it's COVID. We need to always need to be mindful of our hand washing. But they had a little dispenser of soap and some water for the priest, but then they had hand sanitizer for me. Well, obviously, I just put the soap in my hand, and it was all lathered up, and I thought, okay, but I can't use their water and towel, because then that would not be clean for them. So I'm sitting there thinking, okay, so then I just put some hand sanitizer on, rubbed it in, just so it kind of padded my surplus, and just went on. So, you know, there's really no wrong way. I mean, my hands were clean.
They were very clean.
I think that's exactly what part of the vocation of a deacon is to do, is when the surprises come up, you just move forward. And one of the best pieces of advice that I got back when I was discerning and trying to determine what to do was from the acolyte master back at the church I was going to in Dallas, and he said, "Move slowly and look holy."
I'll have to remember that.
Yeah, if you just make it look like, oh, I'm meant to do that. No attention gets called to it, and you just keep moving on. Happens all the time. Now, deacons, you've talked about setting the table, but what else do deacons do during the service for folks that don't know about this?
Well, proclaiming the gospel. And so that was, I got to do that for the first time Sunday. Sunday was full, this past weekend was full of first of everything. But I got to read the gospel and how it's done there, which is really nice, and is the verger.
Okay, you're going to need to explain what that is to some of the folks that are listening.
Okay, the verger is sort of the one who leads in and, I don't know if master of ceremonies, make sure that things go accordingly and smoothly and in order. And so all I had to do was walk behind him, and when he stopped in the middle of the aisle, he turned around and opened the gospel book for me. So he really helped me out and made my job easier. And of course, I practiced reading beforehand to make sure I could actually pronounce the words and there wasn't anything, you know, difficult. But it's important. Just, you know, you want to have it be meaningful. And so, you know, reading in advance and seeing what the, you know, so that's one of the things is not only proclaiming the good news in the gospel, but when we process out, that we dismiss the people and you know, to go out and to do this work. So that was, those were really special moments on Sunday mm-hmm. to fulfill the liturgical role, the you know, the role that's, you know, during the service for the deacon. Mm-hmm. And of course, I was nervous, but you know, I didn't fall down, and everything got done.
And so Debbie has mentioned one other thing that the deacon does that y'all actually shared at your ordination, which I thought was really wonderful. Jessica, what's that other thing?
The dismissal, which I think Debbie mentioned, which is kind mm-hmm. of like sending people out into the world. Mm-hmm. And we did it, and we didn't mess it up the first time, and we got to share it. So I'm sure there will be many a times where we feel like mm-hmm. we do mess it up, but mm-hmm. you can't mess it up, right?
You cannot mess it up, because people are going to dismiss themselves, whether you say the right words or not. But yeah, I like the way you're tying it all together, that you're proclaiming the gospel, but the gospel isn't just for inside the building. It's for people to take with them outside the building. And so when you are dismissing them, they're carrying that with them. And that's something really important in your role.
It is. It was really special that Jess and I, that the dismissal was long enough that it was sort of, you know, one person could say the first half, and mm-hmm. and then the other one could say the second half, and that was really, since we, you know, it's really special. You know, we were delayed because of the pandemic, you know, in our ordination, and then Jess mentioned there she has a young one, and you know, she had a baby right at the end or during our classes, and so it was really special to be able to go through this together, and to. We started together, and then to be ordained together has been really special.
I sort of felt like we needed to high five while we were like walking, you know, processing out, but I wasn't sure that would be okay.
You would not have been the first people to do that. I have seen that. So you missed your opportunity there.
We can do it now.
I can just describe for you that we had a high five in here between deacons. So
I think you can hear it. These are excellent microphones.
One of the things that I think is one of the most important qualities for a deacon, and I hope you've been picking up on this, is to also have a sense of humor, to take what you do very seriously, but not necessarily to take yourselves so seriously, right? It sounds like that's what got you through those years of formation and prayer and planning, and it goes fast and then it goes slow. So if you all had any advice for somebody who might be feeling called to a deacon, what would you advise them?
I'd say go for it.
Same.
You know, listen to your heart, listen to your prayers, and seek, you know, talk to someone you trust. There are several deacons here in the diocese. You can contact the diocesan office if you want to talk to a deacon. You know, talk to your clergy, talk to close friends, people that you trust.
And listen for other people that may point you in that direction, because they may see the work that you're doing, and listen to that. It's powerful.
Exactly. I, you know, yes. Sometimes people see it in you before you see it in yourselves.
So it sounds like this is something that you don't just spend your time up on the mountain praying and hoping for getting an answer, that there are really a whole lot of people involved in this.
Oh, absolutely. It's a large network. Definitely, I think I can speak for Debbie. Neither of us would be sitting here today without the support of our communities, and they've been instrumental in this process.
Exactly. Work, home, family, friends, fellow clergy.
It's cool to say fellow clergy, isn't it?
I know. It's kind of, yeah.
Yeah, you get to be on those clergy Zooms now and all of that stuff and figure out, okay, clergy are just like everybody else, except we do something different on Sundays and hopefully do some things that make a difference during the week, right?
Yes, this is true. We are. I'm still Debbie.
I think I'm still Jessica.
You sure about that?
I am positive.
What do your kids think?
You know, like, one of my children spent the entire time looking at her teacher during the service, but I was like, that's why you were there, because you've been such a part of our lives and mm-hmm. taking care of my children, and just thinking about the St. George's community and how wonderful they have been and continue to be. And so, of course, she was looking at her teacher, you know, of course, during the service. She kept saying, turn around, your mother's being ordained. But for her, it was just like, here are the people that I love all in the same room.
Mm-hmm. And she'll probably have a wonderful memory of that, and absolutely no memory of what you were doing.
Absolutely not. So for them, this is just like regular every day. Nothing has changed.
But that's okay, because from now on, they're going to know that there are sometimes mom wears that white collar and that stole, and that's important.
When we went to lunch after the ordination, and I got there late. My family was already there, and my grandson, I have 3-year-old grandson, AJ, and I walked in, and I just had on my shirt, and he looked at me, he goes, where did your white blouse go? And he goes, where is it? And I said, well, yeah, talk about my ab, you know, the it looks like, I guess it's like a white robe or whatever, mm-hmm. for those out there who are not familiar with it, but AJ wanted to know where did my other garment go?
Very observant.
Kids are.
Well, when we think of our feast days, our days where we celebrate people who have done remarkable things for the church, whether they were the apostles or whether they were some of the early martyrs, often people don't think about deacons as being those, but our first martyr was a deacon, wasn't he?
Stephen.
Stephen, yes. That's right. He's December 26th, the big feast day right after Christmas, especially if you ever get to be in Italy or Spain, any of the Latin American countries, that's a big, big feast day. We tend to call it Boxing Day here and box things up. That's really our first martyr of the faith was Stephen, a deacon. And some of the other ones, St. Philip the Evangelist, he was a deacon. That's October 11th. St. Lawrence, the kids in chapel always love that one. He was a martyr who said some kind of funny things when he was being martyred. I would only do that with the older kids, but that's a good one. And one that people forget all the time is St. Francis of Assisi. He made it clear that he was not called to be a priest, did not want to be a priest, but he still preached, he still talked with the animals, he still did amazing things. In fact, he's one of our most beloved saints, and he was a deacon. And we do have a time here where we have what we call Stump the Priest, and the question to me, since I'm the priest here, I'm not going to try to stump you guys.
Thank you. Wouldn't be hard.
No,
stump me.
It would not.
I promised them I would be kind to them today. But I was asked, does the Bible talk about any women who have been deacons? The Greek word that we would be looking at is diakonos. And, okay, here's my question to y'all. What's the name of our bishop?
Phoebe.
Phoebe, that's right. So in Romans chapter 16, there is Phoebe, and she is called a diakonos. So we do have a woman. So y'all are in a fine tradition of women. But there is actually another one, and we don't typically call her a deacon for a variety of reasons. But y'all know the story of Mary and Martha, and how Mary is the one who's there at Jesus' feet just listening to him, and Martha's in the kitchen doing work. Exactly. Well, that Greek word for work is actually diakonos too. It's not that she is doing any kind of work. She is serving. She is serving like a deacon would. So that's another wonderful female role model out there for deacons, and most yes. people don't think much about that. When people ask, you know, is it okay for a woman to be a deacon, you got two that go right back to the scripture. I think that's a really wonderful thing. And then I think it's also really wonderful that we got a bishop that is named after the female in the Bible that is right out there. She's a deacon. And that exactly. is one of the things that we also say in the Episcopal Church, which is once a deacon, always a deacon. So I was ordained a deacon once upon a time ago, and I still have that deacon in me. And the bishop has had another ordination, and so she's a bishop, but she's got that deacon in her as well. So it is a wonderful lifetime vocation. And Debbie, you may remember back when you were interviewing with the Commission on Ministry, and you were concerned about preaching.
Yes.
And you talked about some folks who are very poetic. And you just said, you know, I am not a poet. And what did you say that you like to listen to?
I like country music.
All right. I think country music is perfect for deacons. And I told you to listen to a song, didn't I?
Yes, you did.
Johnny Cash's Man in Black. And Johnny Cash talks about why he wears that black shirt. And I think that our clergy wear it for the same reason. That we wear it for, I love this, for the poor and beaten down, for those that are living in the hopeless, hungry side of town, for the prisoner. You mentioned prison music. So he is singing this for all who haven't heard the good news of God's grace. So I would like for us to tee up Johnny Cash's Man in Black.
Oh, excellent.
Well, you wonder why I always dress in black, why you never see bright colors on my back, and why does my appearance seem to have a somber tone? Well, there's a reason for the things that I have on. I wear the black for the poor and the beaten down, living in the hopeless, hungry side of town. I wear it for the prisoner who has long paid for his crime, but is there because he's a victim of the time. I wear the black for those who've never read or listened to the words that Jesus said about the road to happiness through love and charity. Why, you think he's talking straight to you and me? Well, we're doing mighty fine, I do suppose, in our streak of lightning cars and fancy clothes. But just so we're reminded of the ones who are held back, up front there ought to be a man in black. I wear it for the sick and lonely old, for the reckless ones whose bad trip left them cold. I wear the black in mourning for the lives that could have been. Each week we lose 100 fine young men. And I wear it for the thousands who have died, believing that the Lord was on their side. I wear it for another 100,000 who have died, believing that we all were on their side. Things that never will be right, I know, and things need changing everywhere you go. But till we start to make a move to make a few things right, you'll never see me wear a suit of white. Oh, I'd love to wear a rainbow every day and tell the world that everything's okay. But I'll try to carry off a little darkness on my back till things are brighter. I'm the man in black.
We were just looking at each other here thinking maybe we need to have Roseanne Cash or somebody do Woman in Black.
Ooh, that would be good.
Because Johnny said this for a time where It was men on the stage, but now we got women doing these things too. There's one of my favorite songs is Keb Moe's "Put a Woman in Charge."
Yes.
And so any final thoughts that either one of y'all have? Or y'all talked about, especially after, it was kind of mean of me to have y'all talk about food at the very beginning, so appreciate that. And that, now the restaurants are open here, so you can get something on the way out. I do want to remind the listeners that the Episcopal Diocese of Tennessee is here every Thursday morning at 8 o'clock. You can find the diocese on Facebook and on Instagram, and we have a brand new website, and it is edwtn.org. We actually have an old one, and we hope you won't be able to get to that one because the new one looks a whole lot better, and we sure appreciate the folks that put that together. You can also listen to past episodes of Faithfully Memphis on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts, and please be sure that you like them and subscribe to them. So this is Sharon Alexander along with Debbie McCandless and Jessica Abel. I guess I should say Deacon Debbie McCandless and Deacon Jessica Abel for Faithfully Memphis. Until next time, stay safe and stay positive.
WYXR 91.7 FM Memphis, powered by the Crosstown Radio Partnership between the Daily Memphian.